Mama's going to tell us about some of her early childhood and growing up.
Well, I can remember playing hide and seek out here behind all these huge trees, and of course it was quite a nice place to play hide and seek. And then we catch lightning bugs.
Our tree is weak.
Well, it was always the children in the family. Monica, Edithia, and later Evan McGee, and just mostly the family in the family, because it was, we were sort of isolated from home, seemed farther then than it does now. And it was kind of harder to get here than it was than it is now. But let's see what. Oh, I can remember playing paper dolls around the table, and the paper dolls consisted of figures cut out of catalogs, and we'd find one that was asleep or one that was in night clothes, one was dressed up, one going riding. You'd be surprised how much fun we had. We made furniture from paper, wax boxes to make a nice little wagon. And it really took a little bit more ingenuity than some of the toys they have now.
It took you time to cut them out.
Right. And I can remember taking old pieces of broken china and playing my favorite plates and saucers and so forth. But and of course we had all the conversation I think that went with it, and I never laughed for that. I was very talkative. But now those two things, and then of course on the Trinity Station, I don't remember just when that came, but it's pretty early. That was lots of fun.
I remember when the Rileys lived out here, and Jim Riley played tennis, and and I remember Mr. Jones would let, sometimes he'd let people from town come out here and play.
Yes, yes, and of course, long about that time I grew up and went away, you know, so I met some of the years.
So tell us about your school years.
Well,
I won so many honors, and I have a thing, I found a thing in the paper where you and Etta Field performed for the radio station.
Oh, I had forgotten that. Yes, we took piano religiously. They saw to it that there was a good teacher. Somebody in the family furnished the means, and we had a good piano teacher. It was unfortunate that I didn't become a great pianist, because that's what they would like for me to have done. And then every Saturday we went to classes with the same teacher. We studied history of music and theory of music every Saturday morning.
Was that Vern Tomlinson?
Yes. She was an excellent teacher too. I can remember a few before her. Mamie Burroughs was one, and Elaine somebody. They were both excellent. And I loved the theory, but I wasn't too good about playing. I don't know what was the matter. My hands didn't function right. But they saw to it that we could go to, somebody in the family, the aunts or uncles or somebody would get all of us that wanted to go, and it was usually just Monica on that field and I who were the interested. But anyway, we would go to opera. We'd go to a few plays. I can remember going to Kansas City to see The Miracle.
And then you rode the train then, of course.
Oh, yes. And then even later, Oklahoma City had Metropolitan before Tulsa. And somehow, we had to spend the night. We'd go to Oklahoma City
and stay in the hotel.
Stay in the hotel and then come back the next day. And they thought it was worth the effort and the money. And we did have a wonderful musical education in that way. And even though none of us performed as adults, we did have the appreciation, and that's worth a lot.
Yes, it is, because so many people today have no earthly knowledge of any of it.
And I often think, oh, they missed so much enjoyment by not knowing what to listen for and how to listen. I wouldn't take anything for my music education.
Either. Well, and your reading, too, because everybody read so prolifically.
That's right, you read a lot. I wouldn't read some of the books I read as a child. Now, you couldn't get the modern-day children to read them, else they'd be dinosaur or something like that.
Laugh you right off of it.
But anyway, we did read. I went off to college pretty young, and Daddy thought I was too young. Well, anyway, I was just 16, and he decided that was just much too young to graduate and go away from home. So he made me drop a subject so I wouldn't have enough credits to graduate. Oh, I was crushed. I was just crushed. Well, Mrs. B.E. Hutton, the wife of the superintendent, was also the math teacher. I guess she felt sorry for me. Anyway, she arranged for me to take math, one of the subjects that I needed or could use, in a study hall. And I didn't say anything to my father. Well, when graduation time came, I had no credit. He was pretty angry with me, but he couldn't keep me from getting my diploma. So I went off to college. I wanted to go to Randolph-Macon. But Randolph-Macon at that time required 4 years of Latin to enter.
Oh, my.
They offered only two here. And Daddy was trying to help. He said, oh, can't you take it on the side? And they required the fifth year, your first year, the fifth year Latin. I said, Dad, there's no way I could take 3 years Latin and carry on. I said, just can't do it. And he really saw that I couldn't. So then we hunted for another school, which was a junior college then, with accreditation, if you took the right thing, to go into the university as a junior after 2 years. So that's where I went to Ward Belmont. And I enjoyed it and did a lot of growing up.
It was all girls' school.
Yes, it was a girls' school. And they even had day students that down even in the kindergarten and smaller children in the grades coming up. Of course, I went as a college student. And I mean,
where is Ward Belmont?
It's in Nashville, Tennessee. It doesn't exist now. It went the way of a lot of other junior colleges. They just couldn't make ends meet. And now it's a four-year co-ed college called Belmont College. But it's in the same place, and we worked hard. I mean, it was just really university work. I mean, I didn't take typing. it was college work, and it was very hard. The classes were small. You had to recite nearly every day you went there, and they knew whether you had studied or not, definitely. And I did all right. I made pretty good grades, and I got some offices and things like that. But I had my eyes set on going to a co-ed school. Now, I didn't get there right away. Daddy kind of waylaid me here. I stayed in Bristow taking typing and shorthand in high school. And that was kind of a bitter pill after you'd been off to college to go back to the local high school. But I did. And I got to OU, and then that's when I got my honors. I did more honors work than I did studying, but I'd had such a wonderful foundation in Ward Belmont, really. And I don't mean that I failed. I didn't, because I made more.
Yeah, you were voted that most outstanding.
Yes, I was voted the most outstanding girl student, they called. And on the cup, it's girl student, not woman student. And Carl Albert received it for the boy. The loving cup was...
Well, for some of the
people who might not know who Carl Albert is, because later on they may forget.
Yes. Well, he was a Speaker of the House for many, many years, and I guess nobody has excelled that, has exceeded that number of years.
So.
Yeah. And he was short, like I was, like I am, and had a stool to stand on, even in the House of Representatives in Washington. They have a replica of his, an exact replica of his office down in at OU. And I looked around the desk to see if that little stool was there, and it was. And it's not a stool, it's more of a little block, a little step.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, and since that time, you've been honored several times by OU.
Yes, they have asked me to come back, and 1 year Carl was there, and I got, they had all the Lexizer Medal students who had been Lexizer Medal recipients to come back, and I did, and that was a really nice year, and I worked real hard in my sorority and got all the offices they had to offer.
And what sorority did you belong to, Bella?
Kappa Kappa Gamma. I don't know how I knew one from the other, because I had never been around people who had been to the university, you know, very much, but I did have a few friends from North Elma who had gone to OU, and one of the ones that I liked the most had gone into that sorority, so that sort of turned my attention to that, and I enjoyed it, and well, then when I came back here after school.
When did you graduate?
Oh, let's see, I graduated from OU in 31. I finished in 30, but I got my diploma in 31, in the spring of 31. We were up in Missouri at Daddy's camp at the time, and he didn't want me to go back to Norman. It was too long a trip, so I didn't get to go to graduation, but I got my diploma.
The camp was at Galena?
Galena, Missouri. It was out from that little town on the river, on the...
Is that camp still there today, as you know?
I'm not sure. It was such a beautiful little spot, but they built a dam somewhere down the river, the James River, and the government said it would be flooded. So they required Mother at that time to be on it. To move the camp up on a bluff. Well, that took away the charm of it, because it was down there.
By the river.
By the river, and lots of trees around. Well, a bluff it doesn't give that beauty. So she sold it. I remember John and I went up there to help her get the deal consummated. And but lots of boys went up there in the summertime.
I remember the Demolays, so many of the Demolays.
It was a big, big thing, and Mother worked awfully hard. Well, we all did. Everybody worked hard, because they had the programs to outline and implement, and you had to keep a bunch of folks busy, but you were busy too.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was a great learning experience.
Oh, yes, it really was for the boys.
It was really a Christian.
Yes, they were under good influences, and Dale, as I say, he enjoyed boys and talking with them and seeing if he could develop them and their personalities and guide them in the right direction. So, now I'm trying to think what else you want.
I just want you to tell me anything that stands out in your mind. Think about what you'd like for your grandchildren to know, you know.
Oh, about me.
About you. And
well, one of them asked me during the Christmas holiday, said, Granny, tell me something about your child. I said, well, while we were eating, I was a little hard-pressed to think of anything, because my life was so different. You see, I'm not...
Well, he really expected a lot of you, I think.
Oh, my. Did they? when I said children were seen and not heard in my day, I mean literally.
Yeah.
And that keeps you from being able to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Develop socially, really.
Uh-huh. And Etta Field and I talked about it. She was, and you were not to show your emotions. When I grew up, no, if you were sad, don't show it. If you were, don't act like a hoodlum and laugh all the time, see? Yes. I don't know how to explain it, except that children had their place in that era. Well, I can't think of anything that I might have left out. You were talking about games. I can remember as a child playing jacks. Oh, I would wear my fingers out playing jacks.
I don't think I've seen any children playing jacks or hide and seek or anything.
No. And, oh, we had all kinds of games and different parts of the jacks game. I can remember playing marbles.
Uh-huh.
And Edwin McMillan used to love to tell about the time that I beat him playing marbles, and it made him so mad because a little old squirt of a girl beat him. Of course, probably that one time. But anyway, I loved to do things as a child. I really did.
Yeah.
And
they played games like jack straws and pick up sticks.
Yeah, yeah. I can remember that too. But later on, my playing hours were spent practicing again. And as I say, it was a shame I didn't become a wonderful pianist. You know, Daddy had an organ, and I think he would like for me to have taken that up so I could entertain him. Mother did play, and she loved it. And she used to try to play the violin.
I can remember Lyle Thurman coming out here and practicing the organ, and that was the highlight of his life. And look what it led to for Lyle.
That's right. Daddy was good to people, awfully good to people, and if they tried to be worthy,
this was important to
him. Uh huh. That was, and that was good training, and that's why I used to get inwardly so upset when I would see the boys smoking after he had given them $100 bill to give it up. Daddy was good. Some people...
He was trusting.
Yes. I think some people tried to work him a little bit, maneuver, you know, soft soaping. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't.
Okay, now then, if you can't think of anything at this point in time about your early days, tell us about your two sons.
Oh, well, I used to say I wanted four children. Well, when I found out they were a little bit different than that, I had to settle for two. But I worked, waited a long time to get the second one. It just didn't happen that way. But they were different as daylight and dawn, which is often the case in a family. No two are alike. Roland was precocious right from the beginning. I don't know whether it was because I had to entertain him so much when he was recovering from surgery on his hands, when he'd had this terrible burn. But I did spend a lot of time.
Now, he fell on the floor furnace.
That's right, a floor furnace. And he was little, didn't know to move. So when my back was turned when he fell, but when I turned around, they see seconds count. Well, his hands were badly burned, and his arm and his face too, but it was the palms of his hands that were kept there that caused. Nowadays, I don't see those floor furnaces.
No.
And I'm glad they don't have them anymore. They're very, very bad for about accidents for children. Anyway, there was no plastic surgeon in Tulsa or Oklahoma City at the time, so we had to, when he was about two, I could see that his hands were growing and drawing them up. So we had to go to St. Louis for plastic surgery, Barnes Children.
That's where my brother went.
Yeah, and wonderful, wonderful.
But then he didn't have to have any more surgery till he was a teenager. And because his hands were growing. But all this time, see, I had to spend a lot of time with him. And he was had an inquiring mind.
Very, very intelligent.
I could remember we would take an opera and I'd get a box of some kind, you know, and make the stage and we'd make characters and play out the story. So when he was old enough to go to opera, he knew quite a bit about them. He was very familiar as a high school student with the operas, and we didn't have that money given in Oklahoma, but he was familiar with it. Well, then, when he went off to college, I think there was a Presbyterian preacher who was from the Princeton Theological Seminary, and we were wondering where to send. He said, oh, why don't you go to Princeton? Well, I hadn't even thought of that, you know, and I didn't know much about it, but he got in.
Well, that was an honor in itself.
Right. There were many, very many students from this part of the country at that time going east, as there are now. Well, then when Roger came along, he had that in mind too, but he was afraid he couldn't get in. However, he did. So those were busy years, and I can remember when Roger went off to school, I said, you may not like it, but I think you better go on the train while it's still going. So when he went to college, he had a room, whatever, roommate or whatever they called him, and went to Princeton. That was the last time he ever did, because they began to fail, you know, and not be very good.
No more trains running.
Right, that's right. But he went to college on the train. And
well, that's a nice remembrance for Roger.
I kind of thought so, too. And he never did after that. But I said, it was my idea. I said, you better go, because I don't think it's going to last long.
Now, when did Roland graduate from Princeton?
Oh, let's see, 56, I believe. And he graduated cum laude and worked. Both of the boys worked while they were there.
That's great.
I think we might have managed without it, but we barely managed with it working. Because even then, those schools were expensive. And I can remember why. They took different types of jobs in school. Roland worked in the library. And then got to be a sort of a secretary for one of the professors, which was wonderful. Roger helped a lady put in her flower bed. He did digging in the dirt and made some good friends that way. But and I don't regret it. I think it maybe it would have been easier if they hadn't had to work. But they got through all right, both of them. And they worked, and I think it helped, really.
And tell about Roland going to England. I think that was a wonderful honor.
Oh, Roland got some grants that took him to England, and he had a trip to Europe that was just fantastic. He and one of his friends, and that's before there was so much travel in Europe. And in fact, in later years, Sarah, his wife, and I did some of the same route that he took, and we found it very interesting, rather tiring because it was so inclusive, but it was great. And then he stayed in England 1 year. He began to find things that were in his field. Now, the one thing that Roland did that was very, very outstanding was that when he began to teach out of college, see, he got his doctor's degree from Stanford. And I think he was, if not the youngest, the next to the youngest graduate to get a doctor's degree. And John and I had said, well, why not go ahead and get it? We can help you a little bit now. And if you wait till you're married and have kids, well, then it'll be 10 times harder. So if you can, get it now. Well, he did. Then he went to teach at Indiana. Well, Roland was such an inquisitive mind that he went through some manuscripts in the library.
In Old English,
weren't they? Old English that nobody had ever paid any attention to, hadn't classified them even. So that's when he became interested in these old, old manuscripts. And it became really a part of his well-known honors.
Yes, he earned a reputation.
Right.
At that
time. He at one time had an exhibit in the J. Pierpont Morgan Library in New York of all of these early manuscripts in the United States.
Oh, my.
Well, that was quite a feat.
Yes.
And the catalog described them because nobody had taken the trouble to even learn the English of that old, old day. It's before Chaucer, you see. Before, you think Chaucer's pretty far back. Well, this is before that. And I can remember he went to Princeton one year. He had a scholarship, not a scholarship, but a Guggenheim grant, something. He was granted entree to their manuscripts.
Well, that's an honor in itself.
And they had certain light that you could help decipher what had been there. And he really worked hard on that. And then he went to England even to study more in their libraries and had entree to the British Museum. And he showed us a little cubicle. And it was very, very interesting. And then, of course, he lived there.
Man, that is hard work.
Oh, yes, and the living conditions, I think they lived on the third floor, no elevator. And shopping, you know, everything was small. And the shopping was for food had to be done so often. You can't just get a whole bunch of stuff. You have no room to put it. And anyway, Sarah had a grant that year, too, and their daughter went to school in London, you remember,
yes.
A year. So that was a nice, nice experience for all of them. I wondered if he didn't pick up a bug in London.
This could have been the start of.
Uh-huh. Now, Roger had a good trip with Billy Fox.
Yes, to the Middle East.
To the Middle East. And I look on Roger as being a definite brunette, kind of dark. They described him as a blonde. When he was in those countries, I said, who's that blonde with you? And both boys were good in French. I've always wanted to be able to speak French fluently. I think it's a little late now to start. But both of them had a good tongue or lip or something for French. They worked at it, though, because Roger, I don't think, had ever had any French till he got to college. College French is terrifically hard. But he worked at it, and Roland said his accent was better than his. Well, they were both good enough for me. And anyway, Roger told us about the time that he and Billy Farha were on a ship cruising somewhere, and they were off. They were sitting at a table, another group not too far away, and they were speaking in French. Well, Roger knew what they were saying, and they were criticizing Roger and Billy. but Roger said he never changed expression till they got up and left. And then he just turned to them and said something to let them know that he'd heard every word they said and knew what they said. Knew what. Well, Roger's had experiences too in a different way. Roland's were in the literary field, and he attained lots of honors.
And he wrote a book.
He wrote a book. He edited several books. He tell you all the honors because they're in certain fields of literature at Rochester. He was head of the English department there at Rochester for 9 years. I don't think anybody had served that long. And finally he said, "Oh, Mom, I can't take it any longer." Said that all the professors were prima donnas. Pretty high on themselves. And, well, they're experts in their fields. And they liked him, though, and he enjoyed it there very much. And it was a shame he had to be taken so young.
And how old was he when he was 50? 50 when he died.
50 when he died.
And what year was that?
In 85. And that's just the height of his career. And it's just one of those things you never will understand, but it happened. So here I am, minus one son, minus a husband, and I'm going on.
Yes, and you still have Roger, and he's done wonderfully well in the business world.
Roger has different talents. He's had some fantastic experiences.
But tell him some of the companies that he's, just named some of the companies that he's worked for.
Okay. He worked for Vanply, which is a subsidiary of Skelly's. And he was stationed out in, lived out in Oregon or Washington there for several months. During that time, it seems that there was some skullduggery going on in the business, and lot of mismanagement. So that at one time they sent him to North Carolina, somewhere down there, and the situation was so bad. Here he was quite young. I don't know why they selected a man so young, but they did. He had to have a Pinkerton man with him everywhere he went. He had to change his motel every night, and it finally got settled, but I think someone was caught, and maybe one man committed suicide over it. I'm not sure, but it was a real problem, and Roger was in the middle of it. I didn't know anything about it till it was all over.
Aren't you glad?
I am glad. Another time, I don't know whether I don't think it was Vanply then, but he was in Paris, and at the airport, the police, the gendarme came and took him down to police headquarters. And what had happened was there had been a big jewel robbery. And the man's name was Roger Collins. And his name was Roger Collins. Well, he knew French. And he didn't know whether that was good or bad, because he knew French, and this man was Roger Collins. Now, if Roger would hear this, he might not think I'm telling it right. But anyway, they took him down to headquarters in Paris.
Oh, my, how scary.
I didn't know this till it was all over. Roland told me about it. And they searched him and questioned him for quite a while before he proved that he wasn't a jewel robbery.
Oh.
You know, well, anyway, that would have scared the whips out of me, and it did hear about it.
Oh, yes.
But he came out of it all right, finally. It was another one. John Roger Collins, isn't that amazing?
Yes.
But I don't think he's had such hair-raising experiences.
But he's had some wonderful jobs.
Yes, he
had. Beautiful offices.
When he worked for Parker, it was very, very pleasant.
You can tell about the next job or whatever you want to tell.
Well, this is a different type of job, not concerned with the oil business like Parker was, but it's very challenging. because it's they do things with the airplane industry.
All right, now what company is this?
This is Nordam. I'd never heard of it till he began to work for them. They're a big company. They've expanded several times since he's been working for them, and I think their latest project is the Hush Kit, which I think sounds wonderful if it can come to pass in completion. It's to put on the bigger airplanes to cut the noise down. But it's very expensive, and it's complicated.
This is for noise pollution. Then.
That's right. And I don't know the status of it now, how they're coming along. Or I think other companies that would like to have the patent or two, you know. So that brings complications. And anyway, I know he works awfully hard.
I know he does too. And I'm going to stop right now because you've talked.